Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
Hello and happy Tuesday. What's going on?
Well, hey, honey.
It's happening.
What's up?
There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q.
I was a sucker for you.
Wow, we're getting poetic today.
No, but that was Sucker by the Joe Bros. And, you know, they just dropped a new album, Happy Again, I believe is what it's called, and haven't heard much about it. So that's that. Anyway.
So, meaning, are people over the Jonas Brothers?
I think everyone's kind of over the Jonas Brothers, but at least Nick Jonas is sexy, and they have, like, the Joe Bro
and
wives.
Married to someone really important and famous.
Yeah, they're all hot, yeah.
Did you hear, is it Sophie Turner might play Boy George?
Actually, that is going to be something we may be talking about in What's the Tea?
Okay. Little tease of you what's know? Coming up. Mm-hmm. Also coming up on the show, we've got Isis King, who's starring in the new Netflix series. Actually, one of the most popular ones, it seems, that has dropped on Netflix, When They See Us. She's going to be joining us later in the show. And
such a powerful show. Like, it honestly was hard for me to watch, but I would recommend everyone watch. I feel like I should come out with a, you know how they do book clubs? I should do like a TV club where we watch shows.
Whenever
together.
Ryan talks about a show, I know I need to watch it because I trust
it's
your opinion.
It's true. It's true.
You're the binge watcher of the group here.
I honestly cannot wait to talk to Isis. She's just an incredible human, and I've been such a fan of hers. And so it's going to be great to just see and chat with her for a minute.
Also, our question of the day is something that seems to, you know, be a bit triggering for me.
Oh, speaking of triggers.
It's all positivity. Is it possible to be too positive?
Oh, honey. Oh, my goodness. I got to tweet that out right now.
Can positivity be annoying, basically?
Basically.
Let us know. Give us a call. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. And you know what? No matter what you say, I'm going to stick with it. Stay positive.
You know what?
I don't care.
Here's the thing. I feel like that's a great, you know, type of moment to have. But I do think there needs to be a balance. And if there's not a balance, then something is either wrong or you're faking it.
Oh,
but
I see.
We can dive into that more when we get there, honey, baby.
Yes,
steps.
Oh, we will. Right now, let's get into what's trending in the news. Top of the hour, using a credit card can be a nerve-wracking issue for some trans people when their name doesn't match their gender presentation. But MasterCard announced today it is working to remedy that problem. As the second largest credit card company with nearly 200 million users, MasterCard will no longer require a legal name change or additional proof of identity to alter the name on someone's credit card. MasterCard is calling its new service the True Name Card. Now, many transgender people have identification and credit cards that include their dead name or incorrect gender, leading to, as I mentioned, anxiety, harassment, and rejection even from cashiers. So MasterCard says the True Name Card is safe and that having specific names on credit cards does not make transactions more secure. So there you go. That's some really good news coming out of a big brand like MasterCard. Now, on the day of his self-declared presidential campaign kickoff, President Trump is threatening to deport millions of immigrants in the United States illegally beginning next week.
Hey.
He wrote this: next week, ICE will begin the process of removing the millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. They will be removed as fast as they came in. Immigration advocates warn that families could again be separated in the kind of broad hardline action the president seems to be promising, which is obviously really scary.
Yeah.
ICE officials have been stretched dealing with increased border crossers, and the administration is hoping that the deal with Mexico to ramp up enforcement at its southern border will free up bed space in its detention centers and could allow ICE agents to do more interior enforcement. Now, Trump is holding a rally tonight in Orlando, Florida, a key state in his reelection hopes. The president used immigration, as we all know, as a key part of his run in the 2016 election to fire up his base of supporters. What do you think about this, Ryan?
I mean, I honestly think it's interesting because Trump is now, it just seems like he's taking further steps into really getting, you know, black or brown people out of this country, and especially not trying to, you know, really find out why obviously people are here, and understanding that they're allowed to be here legally seeking asylum. That is something a part of everyone's rights.
Yeah.
But it seems like at this point he does not care and is willing to make sure that ICE feels as confident as possible to literally get people out of here, even if they don't deserve it.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Actually, Jose Antonio Vargas, who's the founder of Define American, journalist, filmmaker, co-producer, he's actually here as, you know, as an illegal alien, but he's fighting for those rights. He wrote this on his Instagram that was very powerful. Whenever President Trump tweets about immigration and I decide to engage, sometimes I don't for my own and mental help. And then he got all these tweets like telling people, hope you've packed. I sincerely hope that ICE comes knocking down your door very soon, amigo. You are a criminal. And if you really gave a damn about America, you would strive to become a legal U.S. citizen. So I would just recommend follow this guy at Jose, J-O-S-E, is writing. He's an incredible person and writer, and has won a Pulitzer Prize. So he's amazing.
Slay.
Yeah. Well, in related news, in a Q&A, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez used the term concentration camps to describe the Trump administration's ramped up use of detention centers for immigrants illegally crossing the southern border. And U.S. Representative Liz Cheney and others accused AOC of minimizing the horrors of the Holocaust by using the term, while others, including many in the Jewish community, I'm a Jew, you know, came to her defense. And I want to talk about this. If you think that her remarks are too far, are going too far, or does she have a point to use concentration camps as a good comparison here?
Yeah.
That's coming up on What's Trending in the News. Richard Fowler will be joining us, Fox News contributor, for that. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is accusing the Trump administration of housing immigrants in concentration camps, which she is, you know, comparing to concentration camps on the Mexican border, and used the phrase never again that is typically associated with the Holocaust. She did this during an Instagram Live, and here's the clip.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border, and that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps. And if that doesn't bother you, I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not, that never again means something. And that the fact that concentration camps are now an institutionalized practice in the home of the free is extraordinarily disturbing, and we need to do something about it.
All right. She also called President Trump a fascist for carrying out policies like this against immigrants.
I'm just trying to find where the lies are.
What the lies of what?
Like, where are the lies? Because I honestly feel like she's speaking straight up facts. In my opinion,
well, yeah,
I feel like that's exactly, if you think about it, in the history of what's kind of going on over at the border, and you see these concentration camps, you see children in cages, you see things, obviously it's not like the Holocaust, like, you know, fact on fact on fact, but there are similarities. And I think there is something that, you know, is so amazing about people, you know, these younger people in government, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that are willing to push those boundaries and say things that, you know, a lot of the older people in government in government are not afraid to say.
Well, yeah, a lot of people, you know, went against this and said, how dare you take something that was a huge genocide, millions of people who died of Jews, and compare it to what's happening now.
I'm sorry, that's just a way to kind of skew the storyline.
Yeah, and then, of course, even, well, I would say if you're not Jewish, then you do have opinion to say that, but why don't we ask the Jewish people and see if they're insulted by her saying something like this? And, you know, a lot of Jews are not. I'm a Jew, and I don't think she was saying this is the same thing as the Holocaust, but guess what? The Holocaust happened slowly but quickly, and a lot of people didn't see the signs. And so when you say never again, it doesn't mean that it's an exact replica of what happened. It's saying that we want you to see history and look back on it and make sure whatever marginalized group you're in, that things like that don't happen again, and that every community stands by each other as we witness this and are part of history watching this happen.
Yeah, it's one of those things where people, honestly, they pick and choose what they want to hear. I mean, she literally says, I don't use these words lightly. I don't use those words to just throw bombs. I use the word because that's what an administration that creates concentration camps is. Exactly. I feel like if people heard, like actually listened, opened up their ears and heard what she was talking about, and then seeing the examples that we see on a day-to-day basis on the news and hear stories of people dying, I mean, trans women dying in the hands of ICE in these concentration camps, and then you hear stories like Donald Trump is pushing to move that stuff quicker and forward. It's like, duh, this is what's going on.
Yeah, into the internment camps used during the Japanese, when there's Japanese Americans during World War II. So there's a lot of comparisons here. Also, let's also remind people, when people want to ID you, this idea of having your ID on you, Jews also in Nazi Germany had to wear the Star of David, right?
Yeah.
And so we say these things not to create fake news or salacious news or spreading of something to get people scared. It's that we've seen this before, and why not be aware of this happening again? We need to be aware of it happening again, and the little steps that are taken to possibly wipe out a certain, a specific group of people. Now, what was interesting is she also tweeted a link to an Esquire article from last week that quoted a University of Virginia lecturer saying that concentration camps have a far larger meaning than usually associated with the Nazis during World War II. And I thought this was really interesting. This person, Waitman Wade Bourne, said, who's actually a Holocaust genocide studies historian, said things can be concentration camps without being Dachau or Auschwitz. Those were two concentration camps, by the way.
Right.
Concentration camps in general have always been designed at the most basic level to separate one group of people from another group, usually because a majority group or the creators of the camp deem the people they're putting in it to be dangerous or undesirable in some way. Okay, with that said, do you see how maybe there's a comparison here?
I mean, there's also an interesting thing when it goes into the fact of what we're seeing a lot of, AOC is talking about something that shouldn't be partisan. She's talking about something that doesn't mean you have to be a Democrat to see it. You don't have to be a Republican to see it. She's talking about something that means you are human. Human beings are losing the right to be civil, human, equal human beings, and they're being treated like they're animals in cages. So I think it's interesting how Republicans and a lot of conservatives and Republicans, I mean, like Liz Cheney, popped into the conversation because they like to kind of skew the narrative and make it like, oh, are you kidding me? Now you're offending and you're being anti-Semitic and you're offending Jewish people everywhere, instead of listening. Guess what? No, this is about human rights. These are about human people trying to just live their lives instead of being put into concentration camps. Look at what's happening. History's repeating itself.
I want to read the thread here. It's actually interesting. So this is from Liz Cheney. Please, AOC, do us all a favor and spend just a few minutes learning some actual history. 6 million Jews were exterminated in the Holocaust. You demean their memory and disgrace yourself with comments like this. Meanwhile, a Jewish historian reacts, saying the history of concentration camps is actually not the same as the history of Nazi death camps and includes the use of camps on Native populations in places like Minnesota, also South Africa during the war. Another person commented who is a Jew. My grandpa's entire family was murdered in the Holocaust. I'm 100% comfortable with AOC and anyone else referring to the current situation as concentration camps. The Holocaust didn't come out of nowhere. It was a slow build like now. People who understand history know this.
So you should read AOC's, she actually shot back at Cheney right after she posted that. She said, hey, Representative Cheney, since you're so eager to educate me, I'm curious, what do you call building mass camps of people being detained without a trial? The first term lawmaker, Alexandra said, how would you dress up DHS's mass separation of thousands of children at the border from their parents?
So something to think about. We'll leave it at that. What's trending in the news,
honey,
today?
A mess.
Yeah.
People just need to listen. I'm telling you, people opened up their ears, cleaned out their ears out of all that wax that's building up in there. The world would be a much better place.
That and a little empathy and compassion. Okay, moving on to top stories in pop culture and entertainment news right now. What's the tea?
Okay, so coming up, we got a whole lot to cover. Now, Boy George, he has the perfect celebrity in mind to play him in his upcoming biopic. But do people agree? I don't know. And honey, Liza Minnelli is throwing some major shade at Lady Gaga. I'm spilling all that tea in 6 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, honey, so let's get into our pop culture entertainment stories of the day. Now, okay, so Boy George had no clue that there was going to be a biopic about him.
How's that possible?
What do you mean, how's that
possible?
You
don't know if that's, like, Elton John knew that there was going to be a biopic about him.
But why would I know? I'm not Boy George.
I
said I didn't know.
Oh, I thought
not Boy George didn't know. What are you talking about?
Okay, continue.
No, I didn't know, and I had no clue, but it feels like it's so right that he's getting one. Well, obviously, he's been talking kind of about, like, who he wants to play him, and he's actually into Sophie Turner, the star of Game of Thrones, Nick Jonas's new wife.
You're talking about the wrong Jonas Brothers.
God.
Get your bros
I'm
together.
I'm telling you, when they all look the same. Just, yeah.
How dare you?
It's true. Nick Jonas, what, is it Joe or Nick? Joe Jonas's wife, Sophie. Okay, cool. Just want to make sure.
Yes, well, anyway, we got it.
So Sophie Turner, she is hoping, she actually, she heard that Boy George was like, oh yeah, I want Sophie to play me because I've always loved her. Well, Sophie was like, okay, I'm down. And she actually said that she is hoping to star in the biopic about the musician. The star took to social media to share that she's on board after Boy George suggested that she play him in an upcoming biopic. He first brought her name up on the Australian radio show Fitzy and Whippa, where he not only suggested her for the role, but basically shut down those that would criticize the casting over her gender. He said, there's been some really interesting suggestions. One of the most interesting suggestions was Sophie Turner. People will say she can't play you. She's a woman, you know, but when I was 17, I would have loved to have been her. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Now, upon the hearing of the news, Turner, obviously, she was like that she would be so down to play Boy George in the film, but no casting announcements have been made yet, so we don't know. It's all speculation. But, you know, of course, Piers Morgan, he loves to hop into things when no one asked him to. He does not approve of Sophie Turner playing Boy George.
Of course he doesn't.
Just because she's simply a woman.
How dare her be a woman?
He literally says, Boy George, in his biopic, presumably at some stage, has sex with people. How is he going to do that if he doesn't have the equipment? There are reality checks to having Sophie Turner playing Boy George, one of which is she is a woman.
I mean, listen, okay. I get that. I think it's good and creative, and she does look a lot like him. Wait, I have a question. Why not let a guy play a guy if we were, like, all about, like, the people who are people playing each other? Like, we talk about representation, how everyone needs to represent each person.
So men need more representation than they...
Well,
because clearly
saying,
men don't have representation.
I'm saying, like, women play women.
Men have no representation. Oh, my God.
But, like, it's... I don't know, would it be weird for a female to play the male character?
Let me stop you real quick, because I see your brain working. Okay. It feels like you're about to have a brain blast. Here's the thing. So he's saying, you know, at some point, at some stage, Boy George has sex with people. Is he actually thinking that Boy George's biopic is going to be some pornographic movie that we're going to actually see the equipment being used?
No, but then you see her being intimate, and then she...
You see an actor acting. You don't see them simulating sex. Honestly, if you look at pictures of Sophie Turner and Boy George side by side,
they look alike.
I mean, I'm just saying. Now, and Boy George is very fluid in his style and his... I mean, he wears makeup. He has the crazy clothes. He was very Prince-esque. And so he has a very fluidity to him that I feel like it would be just fine if he's like, yeah, I feel like she can play me. Why not?
Listen, if he's down, if he was not around anymore, we were just throwing her on the character, I'd be like, maybe would that be what he wanted? Because that's what he wants. I'm open about to all ideas.
It doesn't really seem like it. You want men to have more representation.
No, but I said if he's... if he feels like, if he's a guy, it's just like we talk about, you know, gay characters and obviously, you know, people that are gay playing those characters or trans characters.
But we're talking about marginalized groups in that. What part of the marginalization? Who's marginalized?
No one's marginalized, but if he's a guy, should he have a guy that looks like him play him?
But wouldn't that actually be what you're talking about, a woman playing a role that's not a woman, a woman playing a role that is a male?
Now I'm getting confused.
That's what you would want, right?
I think I would want, I mean, I'm open to it. I just could see a bit of what Pierce is saying.
And we don't also, here's the thing. I think that's what we're stuck on when it comes to gender identity and this construct. Because Boy George is physically or biologically a male, that does not mean he works the same way as what we've put into the world as a standard of what a man acts.
And who knows what's down there?
I mean, I don't want to know. That's none of my business.
I know.
But I think it's interesting that he picked Sophie Turner. And honestly, it's a perfect casting choice. And if anything is, if the reason why, you know, she can't play it is because she's a woman, it sounds very stupid.
It sounds very old school. I was just trying to take maybe a bit of the other side.
I mean, but that's fine. Don't go back from it. Don't go. You had your opinion.
No, you are scaring me right now.
How am I? No, you had your opinion.
I'm kidding. I do think they look alike. It's about how she performs, not just the way she looks.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I honestly don't think it's that big of a deal.
Can we say what Pierce Morgan says? Does Wonder Woman get played by a man? No. Yeah. When someone is a famous man like Boy George, how could it be a woman playing him? That was kind of a funny statement.
Yeah, I was just about to read that. I'm so happy that you did. But producer Vanessa has something to say.
Back in the day, Shakespeare times, men play women. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah.
But women don't play men.
Yeah.
History. We have producer Vanessa dropping some theater history.
I'm very excited that I have two straight women talking to me right now. Okay, so in that case, if you really want to go into that whole thing, that could also be seen as a very problematic situation because
everything is problematic.
But I think in this case, because Boy George, it's his story, he knows what he wants to be portrayed. If he feels, and honestly, what if Boy George actually identifies as a woman?
Then there you go.
Then what does, exactly. So break down all of this stuff happening in the studio right now because I'm right.
Of course.
And Boy Joy is right.
And this is your segment, What's the Tea? So
yes,
you own it.
Exactly. But we have so much, honey, coming up and more. I'm going to be getting rid of Shira and Vanessa. And also, wow. Liza Minnelli says her mother, Judy Garland, would have laughed at Lady Gaga's A Star Is Born. Honey, that shade is coming up in 7 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, so let's talk, first of all, let's talk about Liza Minnelli, because I feel like I am not a new fan. I've always loved her, but I feel like learning more about her, she is one shady, shady queen, and she's just the drama, dramatics. I mean,
drums.
She's everything. The drums.
Drums. That's like the short for drama.
Oh, the drums.
You say so schmeeds, and I'm just...
You've never said drums.
Well, I'm bringing it to the forefront now. The word of the day.
Oh, God, Shira. We'll always take a chance to be awkward. Well, you know, she has basically, she's had an idea of how her mother, Judy Garland, who is, if you don't know who that is, where have you been? Judy Garland is the Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. She's a huge... She was a huge actress back in the late 50s or 40s, all that stuff, back in the day when TV and stuff was black and white.
I love your version of TV and film history.
Well, she was. And also, she was a huge part of the queer community where people were saying, they asked if, are you a Judy? Like, are you my best Judy's? Comes from Judy Garland, because if you're a fan, it was a good way to find out other queer people around. Because it was obviously illegal to be gay.
Well, look at that. I'm learning.
Just saying. That's some good information. Well, Liza Minnelli has an idea of how her mother, Judy Garland, would have reacted to Lady Gaga's A Star Is Born, because Judy also, she was in the first A Star Is Born. You know, A Star Is Born has been a remake from Judy Garland to Barbara Streisand to Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And so she's saying, this is how my mom would have reacted. Well, she talked to Entertainment Tonight, and Garland, who actually starred as Vicki Lester in the 1954 version of the movie, would have laughed. She said then she would have gotten into it. I can hear her saying, okay, let's go. Great to the end. Gaga was obviously Oscar nominated for her performance in the film, It won an Academy Award for the song Shallow, which, still shocking, we still play that song here on Channel Q.
And I still sing to it.
Unfortunately, that's why I'm petitioning
shallow,
for us to get rid of it.
Shallow.
Well, Garland was also nominated for her role in the 1954 film. I think everyone kind of felt that was some shade because she was like, well, she would have just laughed at it. But you never know. I think that's just Liza being good old Liza. She's a queen, honestly, at heart.
Also, it's, you know, remakes, when it was such an iconic movie.
Yeah.
You know, it has been remade, but she was the first, her mom was the first to did the first one.
Yeah,
right?
1954.
So, you know, like, that's something you stay attached to.
Well, and then Judy Garland is such a huge figure in Hollywood. I mean, that's classic old school Hollywood. That's the glam that we all miss. And you know, obviously there's also Minnelli, you know, Liza, she also shared some concerns for the upcoming biopic on her mother's life, Judy, which, you know, Renee Zellweger is going to be starring as Judy.
Wow.
So that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Minnelli actually is not really okay with it. She says, no, I haven't seen anything. When asked if she had seen any of the trailers for the film, she said, I just hope they don't do what they always do. That's all I've got to say.
You know, it's interesting when you have a very famous life and family, and then just the world runs with it, and you're not even attached to these projects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, Minnelli actually continued to speak out against the film in June 2018 to make clear that she was not involved in the film and to deny a report she met with Renee back in the day. She said, I never met nor spoken to Renee Zellweger. I don't know how these stories get started, but I do not approve nor sanction the upcoming film about Judy Garland in any way. Any reports to the contrary are 100% fiction. Now, I feel like this Judy Garland movie, of course, is probably going to be up for all the awards in award season, like the Oscars and all that stuff. And it's also, if you think about it, if you know a little bit of history, kind of about old school Hollywood, it's like a way of to kind of repay the way Hollywood kind of treated Judy Garland back in the day. They really kind of outcast her. Judy had a very struggled kind of career and just life back in the day when it came to Hollywood versus her.
So interesting. Yeah, I love movies like that. I love biopics, and I think they are, if done well, pretty much always going to be nominated or part of award season.
Yeah, the movie is going to kind of focus on Judy's management problems and her various relationships. Variety has kind of reported about. But it's actually opening up. Judy opens September 27th, which is going to be here before you know it. It's coming out this year. So it's going to be very interesting once Liza sees it, if she even watches it or if she hears the reports from it, really what she has to say, because Liza does not hold her tongue.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be like the worst Rotten Tomatoes review.
You never
imagine Liza Minnelli leaving a Rotten Tomatoes review.
Well, I'm actually kind of excited for it, just because Renee Zellweger is a really great actress.
Yeah, and I haven't seen her around lately.
She's on a new show called What If on Netflix.
Okay, well, yeah, that show, but even before that.
Well, you know, she picks and chooses. She's kind of one of those actresses where she can pick and choose what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And she picks the things that, you know, challenge her.
Yeah, blah, blah, you know, whatever. That's the life.
Well, okay. Honey, if you want to know more about this story and others in the pop culture entertainment story world, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com.
Now, When They See Us has been the most watched series on Netflix in the U.S. Since it premiered. It's about the Central Park Five, and we've got model, actress, and star of the show, Isis King, joining us in 9 minutes. It's going to be an amazing interview. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, so Netflix's newest show, When They See Us, directed by Ava DuVernay, chronicles the true story of a notorious case of five black teenagers who were convicted of a rape that they did not commit. Now, joining us is actress, model, humanitarian, and star of the hit show, Isis King, who plays the sister of Corey Wise, Marcy. Hi, Isis.
Hi, how are you?
I am absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, we've been watching the show and very triggered from the show. I think everyone feels very, like, a lot of emotions happening, and it's an honor to talk to you today about it.
Oh, thank you guys so much. It's an honor to talk with you too.
So, Isis, let's start from the jump, because I want to go into, obviously, this amazing character that leads up to, I mean, this is a huge part of your career, but if, for people that don't know who Isis is, could you give a little, you know, backstory on who you are?
Well, okay, so I moved to New York to transition back in, transition meaning I'm transgender, And I moved to New York at the end of 2006. And at the end of 2007, I was homeless. I was living in an organization called the Ali Forney Center. And I ended up being a background extra for a Top Model photo shoot about homelessness. And Tyra, like, picked me out of the background because I was, of course, serving it.
I mean, sickness.
And, amazing. And in 2008, I was the first and only finalist of Top Model to be trans.
Wow.
Which was cycle 11. And then I came back cycle 17 for the All-Star season.
I mean, people talk about representation, and obviously you in the reality TV space really led that, not only kind of with Laverne Cox, but I mean, you being on such a huge show, did you feel like your life was going to change in that moment? Because I mean, obviously you should have won. You were robbed, but you didn't.
I mean, okay. I feel the same. I think in that moment, because I was living in a shelter the first time I was on Top Model, when I got eliminated, I thought, like, oh, my God, what do I do now? Now I'm really out of it, you know, and I don't have anything to go back to, literally nothing to go back to. So I really didn't see the effect of how Top Model was going to change my life. And I think a few months after it aired, I remember it was that December on social media, I got a message from a young gay guy that told me he was about to commit suicide, and seeing my story helped him realize that it was a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think when I heard that message, that's when I really realized, okay, my journey is bigger than me.
Yeah.
And I'm inspiring people. So don't mess it up.
How do you, I guess, go from then, after Top Model, you are possibly confronting, you know, being homeless again. And then what happens?
Well, when I got off the show, at the time, I'm no longer in the barroom scene, but at the time I was, I moved my stuff in with my house father. So I basically slept on his couch and floor for a few months. And then when Tyra surprised me with the surgery on the Tyra show, I just moved my stuff back home with my mom in Maryland. And I stayed there for 2 years while I completed, like, my surgeries. And then I moved back to New York in 2010, and then I went back on All Stars in 2011.
Honey, what a journey. I mean, the journey. Now, we are talking with Isis King, actress, model, humanitarian, and the star, one of the stars of this Ava DuVernay's directed When They See Us, Netflix's newest show. Now, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about that show. What was your preparation like in learning about Marcy, your character, who is trans, and she's the sister of one of the Central Park Five men?
So there wasn't much information that I was given about Marcy, because there wasn't that much information out there about her, unfortunately. And it's kind of hard, because especially for trans women of color, you know, it's so easy for us to be erased in this climate now. So I can't even imagine back in the days of Marcy and when she was alive. So Ava really gave me the space to really confront this how I felt best. And being someone who is the oldest of three kids myself, who's the oldest sibling, I felt a lot of, you know, that encouragement that was coming from Marcy in the words. And because I've had those conversations with my little brothers, and, you know, I never left the home under the same circumstances, but I did move to New York to transition because, you know, I was getting reprimanded for wearing mascara. So I knew that nothing past that would be acceptable in Maryland, where I'm from, which was like an all-black area. And so, yeah, I moved to New York to get away and to figure it out on my own. And that's where I found comfort in the ballroom scene. And that's where I transitioned.
Were you able to meet any of the family or the real life people involved in the story at all? And maybe, well, like, looking at and researching the character or preparing for it?
So this part is kind of a little eerie. I was not able to, but after the project came out, someone reached out to me and said, you know, I'm happy with the way that my sister was portrayed. I wasn't expecting her to be in the story. You know, you remember me, but I just wanted to say thank you. And when I looked through her pictures, I realized, because Marcy and Corey has a younger sister who is also trans, who was portrayed as the little kid with Niecy Nash. And I realized that back in 2007, when I first moved to New York and when I was living in the shelter, during the daytime, you had to be out the house. So I would go a lot of times to this place called The Door, which is where a lot of young kids up to 21 could go. And we used to go there in Vogue. They call it like the Kiki scene, where we used to make little balls. And
yes.
I remember the younger sibling.
Are you kidding me? I just got chills.
So we knew each other, and when she reached out and told me that, and I looked at her page, and I knew exactly who she was, and I got chills myself, and I was like, I cannot believe. I'm freaking out
what?
That I actually had a connection and didn't even realize it.
See?
I mean, honestly, that
so
is...
So she went on to become a beautiful, you know, beautiful woman herself, but that was even before... Like, I think I was just starting my first hormone shot, and she didn't start transitioning yet, but... That gave me chills.
I mean, it really shows that when you're meant to do something, it's really meant for you, right?
Yes, exactly.
Now, oh, my God. So, okay, I want to, I'm just like so
imagine
like.
Imagine how I felt.
Girl, I can't even deal. We have so much coming up with Isis King. Honey, you did not want to miss it. Stay tuned because you're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
We're talking with Isis King. She is the star of Netflix's newest show, When They See Us. It's directed by Ava DuVernay. And we're just chatting about, you know, this experience. Because not to spoil anything, of course, for anyone that hasn't seen it. But Marcy's ending, I feel like, really resonated. And for me, it really, because a lot of my friends, when I first entered into queer spaces, were actually trans women of color. And I felt like that story is something that we really, truly see in, up until now in headlines. Did you feel like it was not shocking, obviously, but how did it feel kind of seeing that the same things are kind of occurring that happened in the past is still currently happening, you know, here in the present?
I mean, well, I definitely think that seeing Marcy like that was necessary because it really gives kind of a cinematic face to what's happening in our community. We are, especially Black trans women, we are being murdered at a alarming rate and no one is paying attention. They're really even making articles or speaking up because usually we are disregarded and misgendered. I think it's sad that it's still happening and no one, it feels like no one cares, but I think it's necessary, especially in this case. This really helped push me to speak up even more because I feel like it would be a disservice if I didn't. Yeah. While Marcy and this storyline was such a big topic. A lot of people, like, I love Pose, but a lot of, say, cis straight men might not watch Pose, but a lot of people would watch this, and that storyline is kind of thrusted in their households where they are forced to kind of see it in a way that maybe they wouldn't usually. You know, yeah. It's forced many conversations, and for people, especially in the Black community, toxic masculinity is pushed so hard in our communities, and it's forced you to see, look, this trans woman, she loved her brother. She just wanted the best for him. She seemed to be a good person, and her life was still cut short, and
yeah.
That's not right. So whether you think, no matter, I seen on Twitter the other day, someone's barber said, oh, maybe she probably tricked someone, because that's usually what people associate with us when we are killed. Oh, we must have tricked someone, which sucks because it's not the case in most cases. But I just like that it at least gets the conversation started more because at the same time, of course, so many women are being killed. Even this month, I think it's like at 5
yeah.
for Pride Month. And it's just really helped get the conversation started even more.
Yeah, Isis King joins us again, one of the stars of When They See Us right now on Netflix. You've been talking about your character. How do you think your character has changed or impacted you as an individual?
Well, it's definitely inspired me to stand up more and to be way more vocal than I think that I was previously. A lot of people, especially us, you know, I want to say all trans women, but reality is this year alone, it's only been Black trans women. Most
yeah.
of the time it is. Not to say it's not other women of color, but I don't know the percentage, but at least what 90, 95% of the time is Black. So that's why when I speak to my Black trans sisters, it's important to continue to uplift them because some of them might not want to speak up, but I understand, you know, it's scary. It's scary out here. And everyone's just trying to survive in a world that already tells you that the color of your skin is wrong, you know, in these days. But for you to be put down or disowned or, you know, beaten or killed just because you're trans or just because you want to live your truth
yeah.
is super horrible. But, you know, I think it's important for me to speak up because I want to help give other people hope. Because if I would have continued to be scared, it would have been a disservice, not just to them, but to myself and my gifts and what I'm able to do in this world.
Mm.
So I want to continue to push them because they need to continue to be stronger and stand stronger in who they are and not let these cowards make them afraid.
I think the really interesting thing, you know, Netflix, they tweeted out that this show has been the most watched series on Netflix in the U.S. every day since it premiered, which is such a powerful moment. You should be, like, living for that because it's incredible.
Oh, definitely.
And I think it's one of those things where I wanted to know, what do you feel is really resonating with people? And also, what do you have to say to people that kind of call it trauma porn in some ways, especially if it triggers a lot of people?
I think it's important in our community. Like, I personally, I've never been arrested or been interrogated. So even seeing what they said or what they shouldn't say, I think that has sparked conversations with parents to tell their kids, oh, this isn't what you're supposed to do, or don't let them do this or say this, you know, or even me, I learned some stuff.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective is important. I think from a perspective of, say, our white counterparts, who some of them who still say, oh, racism doesn't happen, you know, and it's like, this is a clear story of something that happened, but it still is happening today. So I think it forces people to see the realities of what's going on once someone is incarcerated or interrogated, and just how the justice system not only let us down, but can manipulate black bodies in order to get what they want.
We are sitting here with Isis King, the star of Netflix's newest show, When They See Us, which is directed by Ava DuVernay, and it chronicles the true story of a notorious case of five black teenagers, also known as the Central Park Five, who were convicted of a rape they did not commit. Honestly, Isis, your performance in this show, and even though I was wanting you throughout the entire story, but your performance was so beautiful and so touching. We wanted to know kind of more about how is it working with the castmates, like Niecy Nash. I mean, that mother-daughter relationship was so beautiful. It was rough to see, but I feel like it tells such truth.
Well, number one, I have been a fan of Niecy Nash for so long. I told her, I was like, I super loved you in Scream Queens. But even way before that, when she used to wear the flower in her hair, I used to love Niecy Nash. I remember, because I've only seen her in comedy, I was kind of nervous. You know, it's kind of like the happy person that yells and you get scared because that's the one person you never see upset.
Yeah.
So the day that we came to set and knew we would have that scene, I remember seeing her early in the morning. And I was like, oh my God, I love you so much. I'm just kind of nervous because you've always been happy and I have to see you like this. Mm. And she was just like, oh baby, it's going to be okay. Don't worry, we got this. We got this. And I remember after I was singing, she gave me a hug. I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, I know, it's fine. I know it's your character. You know, we're in characters. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But she's just so genuine and so kind. And she was amazing to work with. And Jarrell, my little brother Jarrell, mm-hmm. he was so much trouble.
In what way?
That boy, because we're both, whenever we get together, we clown so much. And we're like, okay, we have to pay attention. Okay, we have to go. And then we would give each other these looks and, like, kind of knock each other out of it. And I was like, okay, I can't look at you. He pull it back so quickly. And I'm like, no, that's not fair. Wait a second. I need a second.
And if people don't know who Jarrell is, he is the star of Moonlight. He was one of the stars of Moonlight, which was a huge Barry Jenkins film that is incredible. So you and him, because I know I've been hearing that you've been in the consider for the Emmys, honey. You know, you and him, y'all better sweep it up.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, Jarrell, he's so awesome. He is so awesome. I got to tell him, because when I did my second audition, I had to fly in to meet Ava. I sent in a self-tape for the first one. Then the next week, I had to fly in. And I didn't know until the last second that my second reading was with him, because they were already filming, so they had to go quick. So she wanted to see our chemistry, and right off the back, we hit it off. And, like, we were joking already and being goofy. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it feels like I already know this guy. And just to see him and how he was able to portray young Corey and grown up Corey, and how they were so different but so alike. He's just a genius, and I'm just so proud of him. And just to see him, you know, when we had to do the cell scene, like, we're acting goofy, and me, him, and Niecy in the cell acting goofy, all of us, and then we just get right to it. I was just like, I'm in this cell with a legend, and with an upcoming, like, a young legend, and I was just so thankful to be with them. But not just that, but also the fact that they were so humble and so sweet. And so funny. This is an experience I won't forget.
Oh, I'm sure. And it's going to, you know, continue with you, because once again, award season's coming up. So just saying, we're just putting it out there.
I'm not even, look.
I know.
I'm not even trying to think about it.
I know.
First of all,
know,
you don't have to. We'll think about it for you. We'll take all that weight
oh
for
my
you,
God,
honey.
Thank you.
What
thank
about,
you so much.
What about working with Ava DuVernay? What's that like? She's such a powerhouse.
Ava brought this calm confidence that I've never experienced out of a director. She was super kind, super attentive and aware, and you really wanted to do your best, not just for you, but for her. And I remember that day that I had the scene with Niecy. You know, I didn't really sleep that night. I just kept thinking the whole, like, because I knew I would have to go there over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I've been on set where I had to do that, but this was three cameras, six angles per person. And it's like, so I knew we would have to do it so many times. And I was just nervous about just wanting to land it and get to that moment quick because, it was so much going on. It's easy to kind of lose focus and you have to just jump back into another take from the beginning. So I remember coming in that day and I said, Ava, I had a dream that we finished and you looked at me and just said, I'm so proud of you. And, the day went on, we kept going, and literally at the end, she came up and put her arm around me and she looked at me and said, I'm so very proud of you. You did amazing. And I lost it.
Oh, my okay. goodness.
I started bawling my big eyes out. And, that moment for me was just one of the most, because people don't know, I've been acting for just as long as I've been on Top Model, and I've had roles here and there. I even went to the Philippines to shoot a film in 2011. I was there for a month. And, I feel like a lot of times because I was on reality TV or because I was a model, I'm just typecast so many times and I'm looked over for roles.
Yeah.
That really allows you to be something different. And not that there have been many for us, unfortunately, but hopefully this really sparks that. When I went in that audition and I knew, this would require me to play before and after transition, and I was just like, can I take my wig off? Can I do this? Can I do that? And she's like, you don't have to. I was like, I want to, because I'm like, I don't want you to give this to someone else. I want you to see that I'm serious. I don't care about not looking pretty.
Yeah.
I just want her to see. So I just felt like after just a decade of acting, it's like this gave me a certain validation that I haven't had as an actress yet. To really be in this moment and to show that I'm really serious about it. So I'm just so thankful for Ava for giving me even that platform to really step out of my comfort zone and even pushing me out of my comfort zone, because you can give more. I believe you.
I believe in you. The performance really shows that on screen, and I think it was incredible. And I'm even wondering, because obviously it's only up from here, what's next for you?
Well, I had a really cool audition yesterday, so I don't really know. I hope I get it, because it'll definitely be a whole different light for me.
Yeah, I saw that tweet. I saw you tweet it all the time.
Yeah, so I don't know. Episodic season is coming up very soon, so I think that this is good timing for that. And I don't really know what's coming up next. I think that's the great part about being an actress. I mean, you want amazing things, to happen. But yeah, I'm just excited to see what happens this episodic season.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I'm doing my things for Pride and venturing into the influencer market.
Come on, honey. You better get that coin.
I'm really excited, because now I feel like, okay, they are finally going to take me seriously. And that's so awesome.
Oh my God. Well, Isis, thank you so much for joining us. I honestly am so inspired. I feel like we are all so inspired by you and your story and just what you're putting out into the world. Now, honey, go out there and slay.
I'm ready.
Isis King, everyone, you could check out When They See Us right now on Netflix.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
It's Hear Me Out Tuesdays, and we've got our favorite therapist, Sam Garanzini and Alla Pacquie from the Gay Couples Institute, back with us. Hello, guys.
Hello. Our favorite host.
Oh, hello. Stop it.
You're just too kind. I know I'm your favorite. I don't know about Sharon.
Yes.
Okay, so today our topic is cold feet. What do you do when your partner won't seem to commit? Mm. So let's go there, guys. What inspired this topic?
Well, real quick before you start, it's so funny because this was we were talking about kind of this yesterday in some weird way about, like, how do you break up with someone that you love, but you know that you're not going to marry? And so it's so crazy that we're talking about this. It just works so
perfectly. Serendipity.
Exactly. That is exactly why we wanted to talk about this today. This was brought up to us recently as one of the topics people wanted us to talk about. And there's just a few things we know about what can be happening here when you're willing to go, you know, the full distance with this person. You've met somebody who's really great, and they're just holding back, and you can sense that, or they're saying that explicitly. And there's often a few things going on there. And so we just wanted to talk about different ways to approach that.
Okay, so but first, what are the flags? Like, what should people be noticing in terms of, you know, someone who is getting the cold feet or not wanting to commit? What are the behavioral patterns?
Well, I think some of the first things to notice is, you know, when you're putting... It depends on where it is in the stage of the relationship itself. But let's say it's in the earlier stages, the first few months, when you're putting out bids for attention and they're being kind of turned away or they're being rebuffed. We know what this is when somebody's not quite returning calls, when they're not quite committing, or they're not kind of stepping up to the plate. You can just feel that the energy is dying.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the beginning of a relationship. And then what about, you know, moving into more of a, you know, long-term scenario?
When they say no.
Oh, so you have the conversation of like, where do you see the future?
Sure.
I don't know, or I don't want to talk about it.
Right. They we see that in couples that have been together for a long time where one wants to commit or they want to get married and the other one's like, I'm not sure, let's wait. Let's hold off. Maybe after I get my new job, or there's some other not excuse as in a bad thing, but there's a barrier to getting married, and there's always something else in front of it.
And how do you, I guess, distinguish between it being cold feet and a commitment issue versus just not the right thing, maybe, and like when you should be moving on?
That's exactly right. And so it's the how you distinguish those two things. And I would say you really can't. And you want to approach it, though, what we see people do consistently correctly when it goes well is they kind of approach it like they rather than approach it with what the hell is this, they approach it with what's this. So they approach it kind of like with a, tell me more about this.
Hmm.
Like, I want this, but this is some space. I'm not going to try to convince you either way. I feel this, but just I want to have an honest conversation about where you're at. And they approach it with a more open-ended way, with less of an agenda of trying to convince. That's usually where it starts when it's going to be best.
That's so
right.
Hard.
When a couple,
by the way,
it is. It is hard, but, you know, it also takes a lot of mindset. I've talked about that before, where if you're curious about it, you don't have to do anything. It's a relationship, not a dictatorship. So just because someone says they want to marry you or there's a request, you don't have to necessarily just go, you know, 100% in it, but you must acknowledge it and you must talk about it.
Mm.
And, you know, I think to your point, it's great that people talk about it, because when gay marriage was legal, we saw a whole bunch of people, same-sex couples, that called us where they said, okay, we just in case they were going to take this away, now that it's legal, we're getting married, and now what? And what we realized is they didn't really talk about it. They didn't do the analysis or the awareness around what this means if we got married, what it means if we didn't. So what we're trying to say is it's good to just even talk about it so that this is a conscious decision and it's deliberate rather than hasty.
Yeah, I love, you just said my favorite thing. It's a relationship, not a dictatorship. I love that. That's a good quote. That's like a bumper sticker quote.
Well, okay, here's my thing. I feel like for gay people in general, I feel like there is, from what we're seeing culturally in just relationships, there's more of an opening to either bring in the ideas of open relationships to kind of combat the idea of like having cold feet. Because if you don't feel like you are willing to commit in some ways, if you talk to your partner, then maybe you can open the relationship up. I'm wondering, is that actually a good move?
So what we honestly see is that there's couples that do have amounts of non-monogamy and or whatever you want to call that. We just the biggest umbrella is just call it non-monogamy. And they are very successful with that. And there are a lot of reasons why people will do that. Then there's a lot of reasons when people do it and it is they're totally not successful with it. We also see a lot of people that are really not successful with monogamy. And then we see people that are really successful with monogamy. So the whole open relationship thing and all of that, that does not seem to be a defining characteristic of is it going to work or is it not. I think a lot of the people on our Facebook page started to point this in the right direction when they started to say, look at where the LGBT culture has come. We're coming from a place where our value system around relationships, we kind of, each of us, have to create it ourselves. We don't necessarily come from a place of where we get like, okay, this is how you do this. This is how you have a successful relationship with someone of your same sex. And that's okay to start dating, you know, in your teens and all that stuff that heterosexual people are normed to experience. So we kind of created ourselves. So what you'll see is a lot of permutations of that. And some people have been really successful with it in creating their own, and others not. And it's only recently where the larger culture has started affirming our values around marriage and what that does and doesn't mean.
Interesting. We're going to take a break right now. It's Hear Me Out Tuesdays. We've got Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee with us from the Gay Couples Institute. So we're going to continue this conversation about what does this really mean when someone in a relationship isn't all in? How can we respond? That's coming up on Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q. We are continuing with Hear Me Out Tuesdays. We've got Sam Garanzini and Alapaki Yee from the Gay Couples Institute back with us. So we are talking about what do you do when your partner won't seem to commit? You thought you found the one, but maybe they're not the one.
Doesn't it feel just like yesterday that we just met Sam and Alapaki?
Yes.
Like in person. It just feels like yesterday.
So
are you being nostalgic over this commitment thing?
I am.
Wow, no, I love it. It's
you
really
guys are my longest commitment.
I thought I was, Ryan.
Unfortunately.
So what does it really mean when someone isn't all in, and how do you respond? Like, what if you have a decent relationship on paper, but there's still this feeling like they're not all in?
So what you want to look for, go ahead.
Yeah. So I think there's a just to piggyback on what we were saying earlier about being curious, there's a opportunity for the two people to talk about this. So following what Sam was saying around tell me more about and being curious, there are a few questions you can ask. Some of them, for example, and this is to postpone any problem solving. This is truly just to listen. So like, for example, tell me why this is important to you. What do you wish for? What are you yearning for? What is your dream here? What is your worst case scenario when it comes to us marrying or not marrying? And so you can see in those questions, what they get to is two people being curious about each other and just talking about what this means or doesn't mean without anything happening other than the two people talking.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, when we have friends that, you know, are married, you're married. I feel like, is it true that when you know, and it should be easier than this?
Oh, I think that's a load of bull.
And if it's not, then maybe it's not the right thing.
I think part of our stance where we really come from with this is relationships are a job. Like, relationships are work. And the cool thing is they're just like a job. It's something you can get better at by trying and by learning more about it and being interested in your job. And with that being said, there is a little bit of truth of what you're saying of when it's easy, it's really easy. Mm-hmm. But sooner or later, it gets difficult. and you're not going to be on the same page about everything. And the real masters of relationships, what you see there is they start asking one another those kinds of questions that Alapaki was just saying. Those are highly researched questions. We've tweaked them many different ways. And those questions, especially saying to your partner, okay, we're just going to talk about this. Just tell me what, I can hear it, just what is your disaster scenario here? What's your worst fear? I just want to hear that. Usually, once people start to talk about their fears about moving forward, knowing that they're not going to be convinced to back off of it, what it does is it creates a space once they kind of get it all out to where they can hear something new. Because people listen as a function of being listened to.
Yeah. Oh, that's smart.
Okay. So what is the balance, though, of, I guess, trying to work through and trying to talk to your partner about, okay, what is our clear goal, but then also just knowing that it's just not going to work out? So you're not just staying there.
So you're asking, Ryan, what do you do with that?
I guess you can always hope. I think for me, how I look at it is like you can always talk to your partner. You can always, you know, have these conversations and hope that it will get better. But where's the line of being like, okay, we've tried all that we've tried, and if that person's just not ready for commitment, then I have to go on somewhere else.
Sure. And so I'm a creature of hope, as you can hear from Sam and I. Sam is more analytical. I'm more of a process, talk out loud kind of a guy. So I always think there's a way out. I always think there's hope in talking it through. So I would say if you talk through it a few times and it doesn't go anywhere, the question to ask yourself is, have you done everything possible within your control to make this work? And if the answer is yes, then that's worth noting. If the answer is no, what more do you think you can do? So I'm a creature of hope, but I also understand that some relationships reach its expiration date.
Wow, you're like me, so hope and positivity.
That. Yeah, actually, I told him that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
He was literally you, and then Sam was me.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you guys for joining us and, again, for your insights. We will put a link on our site. We are channelq.com, where you can find all the info about the Gay Couples Institute and get more of their help, because we all need it.
Oh, honey, don't we?
Have a great night.
Awesome. Absolutely, guys. See you next week.
Yep. And coming up, we've got what's trending in the news, top of the hour, and also our question of the day.
Yes, which is, what's the fine line between positivity and delusion? Wink, wink. I'm not talking about you, Shira. Nuh-uh.
Give us a call right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. 833-772-2557. We'll be back right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
It's time for what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour.
Honey, okay. So now earlier, obviously, in the show, we talked to Isis King, who is the star of that new show, When They See Us, Ava DuVernay's directed Netflix series. Well, it's all about the Central Park Five. And so crazy that a journalist, April Ryan, she actually asked the president, who somehow was involved back in the day when he was just known as Donald Trump, asked him, would he apologize for taking out an $80,000 ad in the New York Times encouraging the death penalty for those boys that were very, very young. And here's what he had to say.
People on both sides of that, they admitted their guilt. If you look at Linda Fairstein and if you look at some of the prosecutors, they think that the city should never have settled that case. So we'll leave it at that.
So, yeah, Trump's refusing to apologize. And he even cites Linda Fairstein and saying that obviously some of those people, some people think that the case should have never been settled. So, yeah, that's good old Donald Trump for you.
Meanwhile, the men were exonerated via DNA evidence. We have to mention that. Now, Pose premiered its second season just last week. And as of Monday, it has already been renewed for season 3. That's amazing, because I know they had to wait a long time to find out about season 2. It began its second season with a series high of 1.2 million viewers and picks up a year after the first ended in 1990 when Madonna's Vogue the mega hit about the movement begun by queer people of color was climbing the charts. But 1990 was also a year when HIV and AIDS continued to devastate the LGBTQ plus communities. And Pose's second season weaves ACT UP style activism into its tale of the New York City ball scene and the houses that serves as basically a family for so many trans people. So that's a little summary of season two that you gotta start watching if you're not watching.
Have you had the chance, because I know you're busy, but have you had a chance to see it yet?
No,
because
I need
you
to catch it.
Girl,
catch
I'm telling it. You, it's so, so good. And Sunday, the new episode, Tuesday, actually. Wait, is today Tuesday?
Yeah, today's Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
So
it's coming
Tuesday,
on today.
It's not Sundays.
No, it's not on Sundays anymore. They move it to Tuesdays because, you know, Sundays are occupied by Big Little Lies on HBO. And they didn't want to.
You need to watch that, too.
They didn't want to have the competition. But Tuesdays are perfect, and I cannot wait to watch tonight's episode.
Yeah.
Let's keep those high ratings, honey.
Mm-hmm. Now, Joe Biden made an unexpected visit to Stonewall Inn in New York City. The presidential candidate stopped by the historic landmark in New York City's Greenwich Village to meet with patrons today. And as many of us know, the Stonewall Inn was the site of the 1969 riots, which launched the gay rights movement 50 years ago. And do we have a clip?
No.
Oh, we don't.
No.
There was a clip online, though, of him there. So
yeah, there was
a
clip, but it was just too noisy. Okay. We didn't want to kill everybody's ears.
Finally, in what's trending in the news, another pickup. Netflix announced today that Queer Eye would return to the streaming network for a fourth and fifth season. Season four of the Emmy-winning makeover series will debut July 19th and be set in Kansas City, Missouri.
I feel like they just dropped season three, so
I can't even keep up at this point.
I mean, honestly, I haven't even watched season three yet. I don't even think I finished season two.
Exactly. Production on season five will kick off June 24th in Philadelphia, and it's going to be airing sometime in 2020.
I mean, seriously, there's only so much crying I can do, and that show makes me way too emotional, and I can't do it.
It's good. It's an easy one to watch while you eat. Like, I eat my dinner watching that. No, it's good because some of the other shows you need to really pay attention.
Yeah, because you, by the time you're like crying and there's snot everywhere, it's like dripping into your food.
Yeah.
I painted a picture for you.
Thank you. All right, that was what's trending in the news, top of the hour, right here on Let's Go There. We are moving into our question of the day. What's the fine line between positivity and delusion? And is it possible to be too positive? Give us a call right now, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. So this was inspired, and I'm assuming he's not listening.
I'm listening.
No, I'm assuming the person who inspired this.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was listening every day until he's... No, I'm kidding.
Are you serious? Are you really bringing your drama after we've already had a 3-hour relationship advice moment? And hear me out. You're going to continue to bring your drama.
No, there's no drama. I'm just saying. It made me feel safe that he's not listening so we could just talk about whatever.
You know we're a podcast, right? But speaking of, you can always re-listen to our episodes at wearechannelq.com or anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Anyway.
Just for you, mystery man.
So, basically, he came to LA to visit me, and in my place, and because of who I am, like, there's a lot of quotes and unicorn, and I'm into spiritual stuff. I've been to Nepal, you know, all that stuff. And he was a bit overwhelmed by it, and it kind of brought up this idea. He kind of was just like, you're a bit too positive. Like, I'm a cynic, and you're very positive. Like, what about that happy balance? And it triggered me, like, how is it possible? I've worked so hard to be positive, and now I'm being told I'm too positive?
Well, here's the thing. I will say this before we wrap up. I think sometimes it's not believable. It seems like it's not real. It seems like you're putting on too much.
Putting on a show.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's just like if I wanted to date someone from, you know, the kids' PBS channel,
I would. I was far from kids' PBS this weekend. Just saying.
Ew.
But
ew, I'm talking
that,
about just the glitter of the unicorns,
dude,
and the positivity. It just seems just, it's like not realistic.
I can just as quickly be positive and you see me cry just as easily.
Trust me, yeah, I have.
All right, so I just want, what is the balance? And, you know, what is the fine line between positivity and delusion? Is it possible to be too positive? Again, our number is 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557.
Call Channel Q right now, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-77-CALL-Q. 972-2557. We are the new Channel Q.
Okay, we are continuing with our question of the day. What's the fine line between positivity and delusion? And is it possible to be too positive? You can give us a call right now. As we mentioned, 833-77-CULL-Q. I know we have some social media responses too.
Yes, we do. Thank you. Okay, here we go, actually. Joe says, as always, each relationship is... Wait a second, let me make sure that... Okay, yeah, that's it. As always, each relationship is measured differently, as one partner sees a positive outlook and the other partner may think that person is delusional. It's the see the forest for the trees situation. For the positive, its measurement has to be one on one's unique situation. The delusion is when one loses focus on the positive good. Okay. Beta says, although if I had to find a line, I'd say when you're positive, you still maintain rational, unlike when you're delusional. So I guess the moment you start doing or believing in something beyond all rationality, that's your cue.
I think it's when you are avoiding the obvious or in denial when things are happening. So a lot of times we talk about positivity that it can lead to complacency. And so because you're like, everything's okay. We don't need to do anything about anything. It like actually stalls action.
Yeah. I think here's the thing. I want us to make sure, because I know I'm pretty much the pessimistic voice on this station, like on our show.
There needs to be
show.
A yin and yang.
And I think for me, I have no problems with positive people. I feel like I actually am a very positive person.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be some type of realistic moment. And I think it's okay to feel terrible. I feel like it's okay to sit in negativity sometimes.
You are misplacing as you mentioned, I'm the positivity person. I think that's assuming that you know I sit in negative sometimes.
No.
I'm the crybaby here too.
But I we'll get to our guests really soon. But I think the thing for me is I hate when someone could be going through something, like if I'm going through something, and of course you want to have those positive people giving you those moments of like encouragement, but then sometimes there's that one person that just will not allow you to sit in just like your mess and just allow you to be human for a second because they are really trying to push this, oh my God, you'll be perfect, you'll be great, it's personal growth, find you, it's all these things, and you're just like, I don't want to hear that right now. I want to be human and feel all of my feelings. I don't want to be delusional about the situation. So I think there has to be a balance of being human, but then also, of course, having a positive outlook, knowing that positivity takes you a long way, but just remember that you can have both.
And the balance between like sitting in your crap and then like living in it, right? So we actually have a certified life coach and founder of Life Soul Purpose, Dimi Apichal Newell, joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Yeah, so when I guess you hear us talking about this, what are your thoughts? What is the fine line between positivity and delusion?
Who do you agree with?
I actually think that it's more along the lines of when you have those negative experiences and those negative thoughts and you have to get brave and really delve, that's when you grow.
Mm.
So hyper-focusing on the positive actually is to the detriment of your growth, because you're not taking those experiences and taking the context of those experiences and being able to live inside of those and then impart those experiences upon others. If you can't figure out your own darkness, how can you help somebody else like back into the light?
Mm. Yeah, or even yourself get into the light. But what about people that just call themselves like, oh, I'm a negative Nancy, or I'm just a grump, or I'm just like, you know, not a positive person? I feel like that's a different way of looking at this.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, for people who are like that, it tends to be, you know, somewhere in between. So if you've got somebody who's hyper positive, they're going to experience a realist as someone who's very negative.
Interesting.
Oh, that is interesting. So how, I guess, what's the fine balance between those two?
Yeah.
Because I personally feel like I've used positivity almost like out of survival and I do sit in my crap. I do cry. I feel it, and I share it a lot, and I vent, as everyone knows here in the studio.
Like you just did before the break.
Okay, thanks for the reminder. And Demi has actually helped me. I had a session with her, a life coach session. She was nice enough to give me one. And she does amazing work. And we'll put her links in the blog post. But
thank you.
But I feel like because of whether it be going bankrupt or relationships or, you know, it just life issues and anxiety and all that, like I've gratitude, presence, and positivity has allowed me to shift. Like it, and obviously you can't fake it, right?
Yeah.
Like, but that outlook has allowed me to see what's possible through lots of messes or dark periods. And like, so I've done the work to get there. It's not like I'm just like, oh, positive. I've always had a glass half full attitude. Like I was a jolly kid, but that's where I'm trying to find that like balance of, is it possible to be too positive?
If you're trying to, you know, see things in the positive light so much that you're avoiding the negative space or thinking that, you know, the darkness is too dark, so you just don't want to go there.
Oh.
That's to your detriment.
That's interesting.
But if you're processing things and you're actually going through the different moods and everything that you're having, like you actually have a better sense of what's going on with yourself, so that you're able to pick yourself back up out of it. If you don't process that stuff and you just bottle it or you shove it away and you just pretend everything's good, you're not going to get through it. You're not going to be able to process all of that and get to the next point in your life.
Okay. And see, that's interesting. And I kind of want to go back to a point that you made earlier, saying you said something about kind of like positivity can be at the detriment of someone. And I feel like that's very interesting. When you think about positivity, it is a good thing. It's not the detriment, you know?
Yeah. And if you're hyper-focusing on that side of things to the point where you're not seeing the rest of it, or you're avoiding the rest of it, you're avoiding those kinds of, you know, moments that you take to process and sit back and sit in your crap, like Cher was saying, you basically are just avoiding everything.
Mm.
And you're not really, you know, getting to the point where you understand what's going on internally. You're not using your emotions as indicators, as a dashboard to figure out that something's wrong. And if you drive a car like that, the car's going to fail.
Ooh, what are the processes, our tools to process? You talk about processing. So how can people process what's going on in their lives and their emotion to get to a better place?
So sitting with your emotion and just, you know, figuring out why and how you're feeling it, you know, that's key. So, you know, if you're experiencing an emotion and you don't know specifically what it's tied to, or you do and you're trying to suss out how you feel, or, you know, it's a recurring emotion like anxiety or depression. We have that often come up in my practice, and I sort of reflect back on this as a should be versus is problem.
Hmm.
So a lot of people get married to the way things should be or should have been instead of seeing things the way that they are, and the chasm in between the two creates anxiety or depression.
Oh, yeah, because you're stuck in this, like, ideal or image of what you think your life should be.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, you're living with this image of a parallel universe that didn't occur to you.
Mm.
I could see that. Also, what are your thoughts on the importance of, I guess, you know, when people, like, and you post this all the time, Demi, like, quotes and all that positive stuff. Like, is there a benefit to having that around you, or is it just hippy-dippy stuff?
It depends, you know, really, if it makes you think, it makes you learn, it makes you grow. If it comes from that side of positivity where you're actually, you know, like having a growth moment out of it and able to recontextualize those thoughts into something that can propel you, great. If it's just a matter of, you know, have a great day, it just doesn't really have any substance to it, you know, it's like a bumper sticker.
I mean, yeah. For sure. And I kind of agree with that because I'm thinking, how do people deal with that, you know? Everyone, I feel like, knows that one overly super-duper positive person that kind of is annoying. So how do you deal with that person? How do you deal with, like, kind of letting them know, like, you don't have to be on your, like, soapbox and preach all this stuff to me. Like, I get it. I appreciate it. But sometimes it can be a little too much. How do you have that uncomfortable conversation?
Well, sometimes bright side crap just sucks.
Sometimes what?
Sometimes bright side crap just sucks.
Oh,
God. Mind them, like, there's realism here. Sometimes there's not a bright side.
Yeah.
Sometimes, as much as you want to shine light on a pile of crap, it's still a pile of crap.
See?
But
ooh.
Can you say, like, wow, this, I'm
sprinkles
alive.
To it.
I'm alive. So for me, I would say that I'm grateful because I'm alive and I could smell it. That's the positive side
that
of it.
That is so gross.
That's fair. And if you're able to figure out that that's something that's negative and that's something you want to work on, even better, because you're owning the fact that it's negative and you're able to come to that from a space of being able to move forward and work on that.
Wow, fascinating. I still think, like, in the midst of all this, there will be still be, like, the optimists and the realists, and the debate continues.
I'm the realist.
Yes. I guess I'm the dreamer.
Yeah.
Hey, unicorn dreamer. Well, Dimi, thank you so much for joining us today. You can find her at lifesoulpurpose.com.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
All right, have a great night.
You too.
She does great work, by the way, Great Love Coach. Check her out, lifesoulpurpose.com. All right, coming up, we've got our Yaz Queen of the Day. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
It's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen, but... Before, I do want to say before we're going to Yes Queen, I really enjoyed having our guest on because it does kind of, our question of the day, we love positive people. I love positive people.
Oh my God, it's like the never-ending conversation.
No, but I do want to kind of wrap it up. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I appreciate the positivity in the world, and I appreciate you and your unicorns, Shira. But sometimes
I
just
practical.
Like
I do have some practicality.
That's why you do. But I just want to make sure everyone knows we in love positive people. But sometimes it can just be a little too much.
Okay. Good to know. I'm just gonna censor myself with the world right now.
Great, Shira feels so triggered.
And if anyone knows a therapist, let me know. I'm at Shira Lazar. Slide into my DMs. Oh my God.
Oh God, because she's really looking.
I told you we're honest. I'm always open-minded and open-hearted.
Oh, my God. I hate this show.
It's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
Repeat. For the first time in its history, California flies the gay pride flag at the state capitol building. It's happening. The flag was raised this morning in Sacramento at the request of Governor Gavin Newsom in recognition of Pride Month. It will fly until July 1st. Today's flag raising follows similar historical firsts in Colorado and Wisconsin. And happens at the same time the Trump administration has told U.S. embassies they can't fly pride flags.
Can I say this?
What?
I really want to say this just real quick. If your pride flag does not have the updated colors, which is black and brown for people of color as well, then I just feel like you don't have an updated pride flag. It's not just the rainbow. I think it needs to be a little bit more inclusive. And there is an amazing intersectional pride flag that has the rainbow colors, but also it represents people of color as well. So just saying, it's great that this is happening. This is amazing. But just update your pride flags, peeps.
That's good to know. That's a good PSA.
Thank you.
The flag was raised this morning by staff from the California Department of General Services with oversight from an honor guard from the California National Guard, which has said it will resist the Trump administration's transgender military ban. This is what they had to say. Flying the pride flag over the Capitol is a powerful symbol of California's leadership on LGBTQ civil rights and social justice, a literal beacon of hope to LGBTQ people throughout the state and across the country. Today is the first time the LGBTQ pride flag has flown on the flagpole above the state capitol, but the flag has been hung over balconies, both inside and outside of the building.
I mean,
so
beautiful.
Just like a little history there.
It's just moving on up. Literally.
The Capitol Dome was also eliminated in rainbow colors in June 2015 when the U.S. Supreme Court decided that the 14th Amendment requires all states to grant same-sex marriages and recognize same-sex marriages granted in other states. So they're taking their steps, even as the administration says.
I can't believe that. 2015, that was not that long ago, guys. That was 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Three?
Exactly.
Oh, it's 2009. It's four. Thank you.
Well, I'm
I was about to say,
enough.
It's. I was right. 4 years. And it just feels like it's so long ago. But it's so amazing the strides that we are continually, as LGBTQ people, are going for and fighting. Keep on doing it, y'all.
And that gets our Yaz Queen of the Day.
To Yaz Queen. I tried to do a drum
Oh, my
roll.
God. And you can nominate someone for Yaz Queen of the Day. If something special you want us to highlight or honor, just tweet us at We Are Channel Q.
Yes, you can tweet us at We Are Channel Q, or you can go out to our website at wearechannelq.com, and there is a submission, like a contact button that you can always slide into our Channel Q DMs in some way.
All right. Well, we've got Dr. Chris from Loveline joining us after this, so don't go anywhere. Don't move that dial, switch that stream. You're listening.
I'm leaving. I'm done.
So let's go there with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
Dr. Chris from Loveline
is here. What's up? What's up?
What's up? What's up? We are going to get you to respond to our question of the day.
Sorry.
What is the difference?
Just flirting with Ryan.
Oh.
Oh. We're totally flirting.
Good for you. What's the fine line between positivity and delusion, and is it possible to be too positive?
Yeah, so we talk a little bit about toxic positivity, which is...
It's always add a toxic word.
Say what that means. Give us a definition.
Yeah, well, toxic positivity is kind of, it kind of circles back to your exact question, which is the denial of reality, because reality often means having to feel, encounter, and sit with quote-unquote negative experiences and emotions. Like, that's real. And if you're always denying that in service of just focusing on the positive or making it positive, that's not reality. Like, some people's lives are bad.
Yeah.
Some people do things and have things happen that are hurtful and oppressive, right?
Totally.
So, you know, mental health, emotional health, psychological health is about the ability to feel a full range of emotions.
Yeah.
And some areas of toxic positivity or spirituality or even some psychology will lead you to believe that we should only be feeling the ones that we've deemed to be positive and happy. And that's just not honest or real.
Yeah. And so how do you get through that to have a positive attitude while acknowledging bad stuff? And
I don't think you always need to
much,
have a positive
or like,
attitude.
Or not, like the idea of complaining. Do you,
well, there's so there's an author I like. So in queer theory, you know, queer theory is in an academic field of study which tries to disrupt our normative structures and our ways of thinking. There's this thing called being, it comes out of the feminist world too, a killjoy, a feminist killjoy. Finding value in the people that are critically calling out issues and problems.
Yeah.
That some people say you're being negative, and they're saying, no, this is social justice work, or this is me honestly examining what's happening. And so I don't, your statement was kind of, how do we get back to the positive? Essentially, that's what you're saying.
Or just like, you know,
but not everything always has that.
Well, acknowledging that there's bad stuff happening, not just in the world, but in your life.
Yeah.
And then what, like, how do you not like, I don't know. I find complaining too much. Sometimes it could be a downer.
Well, can I say this?
When you're just like, oh, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. And you need to call yourself out.
So I feel like people that have the opportunity to feel like they can stay in this positive realm is just another version of how you, an example of privilege.
I knew you were going to use the P word.
No, it's
but
true.
He's right.
I think it's true. I think if you, a lot of people don't have that opportunity to just be like, oh, it's a new day. I don't have to deal with the stuff of yesterday.
If you are struggling to pay your bills, if you are homeless, if you are drug addicted, if you've just been cheated on, feel bad.
Yeah.
Something bad happened. It's unhealthy to deny that. But I do agree with you, Shira, that you want to practice diversity, because even though that's happening, at the same time, there are positive things occurring in your life and around you.
Yeah.
But I want you to hold both.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In the least.
It's about a balance, and gratitude is supposedly can rewire your brain.
And yet we don't even live lives of balance, but yet we throw that word around.
True.
There's certain things in my life I want quite imbalanced.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all just posers. Sorry, guys. We're posers.
I like that as the landing point.
It's so
we're all
true.
Just
our lives are messed up. Chris Donahue's a therapist. His life is a bit messed
it's
up.
It's a mess. It's a big
how do you
mess.
Know this corner's a mess? This cul-de-sac is a mess over here.
I love that actually is your cul-de-sac over there.
It is.
I rarely go over that side. Like, I stay over here. Shira's over here. That's Ryan's world.
So I guess the lesson from today's show is that our lives are a mess. I need a therapist.
Yes.
And
I'm working on it for you. I promise you. I will get you referrals.
Thank you.
Our listeners can track the changes once Shira enters therapy.
It's kind of like tracking a Domino's pizza if it's arriving. We're going to track Shira's therapist meter. Is it hot and ready?
And I'll end it there because we can go further down this rabbit hole. But
lots
I'm
of toppings, right?
Choosing out right now. Okay, Loveline is after our
That's
show,
right.
So stay tuned for that. Get your questions ready. What's going on?
A couple things. We got Amaya Scott coming on. She'll be talking about her new book.
Is she coming in studio?
She'll be in studio. And then also, we're going to talk about something that's really important, and it keeps coming up in my office. Again, going with the word toxic, but toxic monogamy. Not that there's anything wrong with monogamy, but the ways that some people run it and expectations on their partners are not healthy. But we are used to it. We've normalized it. So we're going to be calling that out.
Okay. Always interesting. Thank you, Dr. Chris. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we've got Alaska from Drag Race in the studio.
Finally, I get to talk to her about all things Drag Race, yeah. All Stars. What All-Stars was she on? Like 3 or 2? It was one of those, but it's amazing. I can't wait. And she's just phenomenal, and I love her, like, monotone bling. That's how she talks. I love it. It's amazing.
Plus, is college necessary to be successful? We are going there.
And we're breaking it down, because I got some things to say.
That's coming up on the show tomorrow, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay and get a therapist.
And positivity. Only if you want it. Bye.